Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Happy Wednesday. Brady Farkas here, Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3 ESPN.com. Going up until 7 o'clock. Nothing on 101.3 tonight over on 960, though. Celtic basketball, 9 o'clock, taking on the Utah Jazz. And what was supposed to be a Gordon Hayward return to Utah, but not the case. It's Hayward out for, well, the rest of the regular season and probably everything for the Celtics as they continue their ascent in the Eastern Conference, trying to lock down the number two seed, just three games back in the number one seed, the Toronto Raptors, but I have to doubt that they're going to catch that, but they could with about 10 games to play. So Celtics taking on Utah tonight. 24 hours from now, it just feels good to say it, baby. Baseball is going to be back. It's going to be the last, this is the last night without baseball until October. And it's just nice to know that baseball is there. It's nice to know that baseball will be played, that we can get back in our routine of the spring, summer, and then early on in the fall. So happy about that. Reminder, some of the logistics going on this week. We are off the air tomorrow. No huddle, no Champlain Valley Game Night, because we have Red Sox baseball. Sox and Rays, that coverage tomorrow will start at 3:15, opening day, first pitch just after 4 o'clock. And you can join us at Reuben James, downtown Burlington. We will be there for opening day. Sam Adams will be there with us. Not actual Sam Adams, but Sam Adams, the beer. We will have a ton of giveaways, a ton of prizes. We'll give away a pair of Red Sox tickets, and we will have Sam Adams specials. It will be $3 Sam Adams specials. So come on, hang out with us again. You want to watch the game anyways. You might as well come watch opening day with us. Give Arnie a little grief. Cheer on the Sox with Rich. Come have normal baseball conversation. Talk fantasy baseball with me if you want to. Reminder, next Tuesday, we'll be starting up trivia at the Burger Bar, 7:30 to 9:30. We'll have half-price appetizers there every Tuesday within walking distance of St. Michael's across the street from Fanny Allen. So if you're looking for something fun to do on a Tuesday and you can't get downtown, don't want to go downtown, come spend your night with us because that's going to be a blast as well. And remember, no Golic and Wingo word of the day tomorrow because we have no show. So we'll be back on it on Friday, and we do give away tickets on Friday. They're going to be Red Sox-Yankees tickets, so you're really going to want those. If you want to get in, 802-655-6672. Again, you can until 7 o'clock. And then you start baseball season tomorrow. As for what's coming up on the show today, we'll talk about the NFL's new tackling rule. We'll do that at about 6:20 or so, and it's interesting. It's got a big impact on the league. It's going to have a big impact on the league. We'll reiterate something that Jimmy Dykes told us yesterday. Jimmy Dykes, former NCAA basketball head coach and longtime assistant as well, now a current broadcaster for ESPN, he told us something interesting that we hadn't really thought about, that I hadn't really thought about. So we'll reiterate that. We'll do that in this show as well. We'll give you a little bit more about storylines you should be following along during this baseball season. But first, let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line. We mentioned the Celtics tonight. They are taking on they are out west finishing up their western swing, taking on Utah. And Utah, a team that's played pretty well without Gordon Hayward, they're right in the mix for a playoff spot out west. Another guy who knows the NBA game very well, a 13-year NBA veteran, Antonio Daniels. He's done some media work as well for SiriusXM. He's covered for TV, both the Pelicans and the Oklahoma City Thunder. And Antonio Daniels, one of our favorite guests, again, longtime point guard in the NBA. He is with us now right here. Antonio, thanks for being with us, man. How are you?
I'm awesome, Brady. How you doing, brother?
Good as well. I appreciate it. But I can't be as good as you because didn't you just get inducted into your college's Hall of Fame, Bowling Green State University?
Oh, no. I got inducted. Oh, man. I got inducted years ago.
Really? I thought you were just back there for something big.
Yeah, I went back there, but it was I went back there to watch a game, and then they had a bobblehead night for me that I didn't get a chance to attend. But I went back to kind of show my support for the basketball program and Coach Mike Huger, who's a really, really good friend of mine. So I just went back and they just kind of did a little thing at halftime to kind of celebrate me or whatever, but it was no big deal.
Now, do you get into the NCAA tournament while we're talking about college? Are you in on the NCAA tournament?
Hey, I'm going to tell you something crazy, Brady. You know my Final Four? You know who I have for my Final Four?
Did you have Sister Jean in it?
Yep, I had Loyola Chicago playing Michigan, and I had Villanova playing
probably Duke.
No.
Michigan's okay.
That was my Final Four.
So you got them all.
That was my Final Four. Yes, I got them all. No, I'm lying. My Final Four, my bracket was done the first day. It's a wrap.
Now, since you played at a mid-major school, and up here we follow the University of Vermont, another mid-major school, do you love the upsets of the tournament, or would you rather see more of the Blue Bloods winning?
For me, I come from a mid-major school, so I love to see mid-major schools be successful. But now what you're seeing in college basketball is another reason why I'm not a fan of the one and done. This is why, because to me, honestly, these are no longer upsets to me. When you have seniors at mid-major schools who don't get drafted or they have to play all 4 years and you have guys that are freshmen playing against these seniors, the seniors will win a majority of the time. You know, if you look at some of these mid-major schools, you look at some of these schools and why they're so successful, because they have four-year players. And some of these other schools, they may have great individual talent that have been there 1 or 2 years, but you cannot teach talent. I mean, you cannot teach experience. And experience will always pay dividends.
Antonio, we talk about you playing at a mid-major school, getting to the NBA. Now, your circumstances certainly different than most mid-major kids that get to the NBA. You were the number 4 pick in the draft in 97 when you came out. Well, UVM's point guard is probably going to explore trying to get to the NBA as well. How hard is it? How difficult is that road to go from mid-major to getting noticed at that level?
Well, you know, for me, Brady, it was a little different because I had some different circumstances with my brother passing that kind of lit a fire under me my junior year in college. And then everything just kind of changed in. My focus changed. My work ethic changed. Then to go from where I went from my junior year in college to be the number 4 overall pick in the 97 NBA draft, you know, the same year that Tim Duncan was drafted and Chauncey Billups, you know, and Key Ben Horn. Those were the three that went before me in the 97 draft. Basically, I tell kids all the time, if you play, they'll find you.
Yeah.
If you're a good basketball player, they will find you. And then once you get to that next level, regardless as to what that next level may be, whether it's overseas, the NBA, the D-League, or whatever it may be, find out what you do well, do it well, and do it on a consistent basis, and you can carve out a lengthy career in professional sports. There's a lot of money out here to be made just for being a good person, being a good teammate, and doing the right thing and practicing a very healthy work ethic.
Antonio Daniels, 13-year NBA veteran and number 4 pick back in the 1997 draft with us here on Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Let's move over to the NBA, and up here we follow the Celtics, and Kyrie Irving is hurt. I have long said for the last few years, Kyrie Irving is my favorite player to watch in the NBA. You played the guard position at a high level for a long time. What makes Kyrie just so unbelievably good?
Well, number one, his ability to handle the basketball. If you go back and look at point guards throughout the history, Kyrie Irving's ability to handle the basketball sets him apart from many of us, many of us who've ever been blessed to play that position. And number two, his ability to finish at the rim. So there's a difference between shooting, and there's a difference between shooting and finishing. And Kyrie Irving is a finisher around the rim. He has a plethora of floaters, left hand, right hand, just his ability to finish with contact, without contact, angles, using the basket, so many different ways of finishing. He's one of the most difficult guys in this league to guard. He has to be, because he can shoot, he can handle, and he can finish. And with the rule changes nowadays where you're no longer permitted to put your arms on a guy or put your hands on a guy and kind of hold him in place, I can't imagine what it would be like in today's NBA to guard somebody with the skill set of a Kyrie Irving.
I have long made the comparison that Kyrie reminds me of Allen Iverson. They both got a great crossover, both have a quick handle. Iverson was a better defender, Kyrie's a better shooter. Is that a good comparison or is that a lazy comparison?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they're different because Kyrie is a better shooter, so he shoots better with distance. But Kyrie Irving's ability to navigate through defenders with his ability to handle the ball so low to the bench, so like low man wins in basketball. That's what they tell you from the moment that you're young. Low man wins. Kyrie Irving's center of gravity, his ability to handle the basketball and get where he wants to get on the floor is incredible. And I tell you what. It's never a lazy comparison when you're compared to Allen Iverson, because that's one of the best to ever do it. You know, especially in a time where he was slight of frame, he was getting beat up, where you could hand check, where you could hold, all these different things that you were trying to do to keep Allen Iverson in place. And I tell you what, after playing 13 years, he's by far one of the more difficult, if not the most difficult, guard I've ever had to match up with.
You know, speaking of those comparisons, too, Iverson, he played 2 years in college, but his career was done relatively at a young age, and it was kind of out of the league by 31, 32. I don't think Kyrie's headed for that trajectory, but another knee procedure. He's had a number of injuries in his career. He does go to the hoop and finish at the rim, and he gets beat up. I worry about Kyrie's ability to play until his mid-30s. Is that fair?
Well, you know, the thing about Kyrie that that really gets you is the speed doesn't blow you away. He's not incredibly athletic. So when you take those two things out, now you're okay. He can shoot the basketball and he can handle the basketball, which, you know, those two skill sets alone can keep you in this league for a very, very long time. So it's not like a Steve Francis or a Tracy McGrady or, you know, when guys are reliant on their athletic ability or guys are reliant on one particular thing. When you can shoot the basketball, there will always be a need for you on one team. When you can handle the basketball and run a team, somebody in this league will find a place for you. I have no doubt that Kyrie Irving will be able to play into his mid-30s easily.
Now, what about kind of a guy you just kind of struck a chord with me, a guy we've talked a little bit about up here being a former Celtic, is Ray Allen. Like, I didn't realize growing up just how athletic Ray Allen was and how he got to the rim and he was a dunker. And then, you know, when he got to Seattle, and I was a Sonic fan and you played for the Sonics, you know, that's when he started to become one of the greatest shooters of all time and kind of relied on that. That's kind of the transition I feel like you're just talking about.
Yeah, and you know, the thing that's very difficult to do in this league is recreate yourself. So if you look at certain guys that are blessed with the ability to be extremely athletic, when that athleticism is removed from them, they no longer have a game with them. But then you have other guys with the ability to recreate themselves. Vince Carter is a perfect example.
Yeah.
There was one point where Vince Carter was just insanity and one of the best in-game dunkers that you can possibly think about. Tracy McGrady, the same way. But the difference between Vince Carter and Tracy McGrady was Vince Carter's ability to recreate himself. Now he is a proven veteran and a knockdown shooter. First ballot Hall of Famer. So now he's no longer Vinsanity. He's not jumping out the gym, even though it's incredibly impressive to be 40 years old and still dunking. But he recreated himself. And that's very, very difficult to do in today's NBA. You know, when a lot of guys lose their athleticism, it's like, okay, well, I lost my athleticism. It's time for me to move on. And Vince Carter is, I think, the best example that I can think of about someone that has just completely recreated himself. And with Ray Allen always had the ability to shoot the ball. That's never gone. That's never left him. That's always been there since he was back at Connecticut. The thing that people don't realize about Ray, and this is one of the things that I learned from Ray Allen, playing with him in Seattle, is how hard Ray Allen worked to get where he got. So his ability to shoot the basketball, yes, it was God-given, but the amount of work that he put in to perfect his jump shot. So when you see him knock down that shot against the San Antonio Spurs to extend the Miami Heat to seven games and then beat the San Antonio Spurs, those are the shots that he worked on a daily basis, getting to the gym 2, 3, 4 hours before the game starts to work on his craft. You know, so yes, Ray Allen was one heck of an athlete, but to get his jump shot to where it is to be one of the best shooters of all time, the amount of work that he put in to get it there was incredible.
Longtime NBA guard Antonio Daniels with us here on Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Let's go to a team that you see regularly, and you've done a lot of work over the years for the Oklahoma City Thunder. They're in fourth place in the West right now. What happens to Russell Westbrook when that athleticism goes? I think Westbrook has the ability to become a good shooter, but he's not going to be a shooter of Kyrie Irving or Ray Allen's stature. What happens to him when that athleticism goes?
I don't know. You know, that remains to be seen. Can guys recreate themselves? Because Russell Westbrook has a couple of different things that are working for him. It's not just his athleticism. He's also been blessed with the speed.
Yeah.
And the explosiveness to get from inline to inline, from free throw line to free throw line, just about as fast as any guard in the NBA. So that remains to be seen. Another thing that he has working for him is his size. His size at that point guard position. If you look at a guy like Jason Kidd, who was never incredibly athletic, but his size at that point guard position, his ability to dominate the game and other facets of the game outside of athleticism and scoring are what set certain point guards apart. And the thing that I've always loved about Russell Westbrook is he can struggle shooting the basketball and still dominate the game in other facets. So he may go 5 for 20 and end up with 13 points, but with that 13 points, he's going to give you 15 assists and 17 rebounds and 4 steals. So for me, I've always enjoyed when athletes, especially point guards, find a way to dominate the game or impact the game outside of just scoring the basketball. And Russell Westbrook is one of those guys.
Antonio, we'll get you out of here on this. I found it really cool the other night. I'm watching the Celtics game, and it's Jason Tatum going one-on-one with Josh Jackson, and Markelle Fultz is playing for Philadelphia, and the Embiid's there, and Simmons is there. And it felt like in a year where a number of the stars have been hurt, you know, and more recently Kyrie and Irving and Durant, it was great to see kind of this next wave of talent playing all on the same night. I thought it was really good for the NBA the other night.
It's great for the NBA, you know, but it's been great for the NBA for quite some time. You know, if you look at the young talent on a night-to-night basis that you get an opportunity to see play, and you just named a couple of them, you know, Jason Tatum and Josh Jackson. You look at guys like Giannis Antetokounmpo, Nikolai Jokic, Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons. The NBA is in great hands moving forward. And it's just the skill set, the overall skill set that these guys possess. I say this all the time, and I know it makes old school guys a little upset, but the NBA now and guys in the NBA now are more skilled now than they've ever been. Hmm. You can't think of a time in the league where you have guys that are 7'2" doing things like what Kristaps Porzingis is doing, like what Dirk Nowitzki is doing. Can you think of a guy that's 7 foot that's doing what Kevin Durant is doing or LeBron James? You know, look at James Harden at that point guard position. You look at the overall skill set of today's NBA players, and guys are more skilled now at their particular position than they've ever been. Has there ever been a time in the league where you can say it was a positionless league?
No.
Where guy's not a one, he's not a two, he's just a guard. You know, guy's not a four, he's not a five, he's just a front court player. He's, you know what I mean? Where in the past, a guy was called a tweener. You were in between the one and the two, or you were in between the three and the four. But the skill set of guys today, their ability to pass, shoot, handle, and think the game has set them apart from generations of past.
Antonio Daniels, 13-year NBA veteran, has done a lot of work in media, SiriusXM, worked for the Thunder, worked with the Pelicans as well. And Antonio, thank you for joining us. We'd love to do it again, and I'll have to get myself an Antonio Daniels Bowling Green bobblehead soon.
I need to get one myself. Appreciate you, brother. Thanks, Brady.
Thank you, Antonio. One of my favorite guests to talk NBA with, and it's been a while since we got him on, and I'm glad that we were able to catch up here, because what perspective is that? I mean, you're talking about a guy who can tell you what it was like to guard Allen Iverson, what it was like to play Allen Iverson in his prime, in his heyday, and to talk about what makes Kyrie so good. I mean, that's real perspective there. If you want to get in, 802-655-6672. As always, that interview will be available online at the conclusion of the show. When we come back, the NFL has made a major rule change. Whether you like it or not, this rule change has a far-reaching impact. We'll get into that next right here on Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on a Wednesday on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Remember, no show tomorrow off the air. Red Sox baseball opening day is back. Are you excited for opening day? Let us know on the Town Fair Tire text line. We are. We'll be watching it out at Reuben James Main Street in Burlington. Sam Adams specials, $3 for the night all around. So it's going to be good. And then you get lead right into Bruins and Lightning and a big matchup in the NHL and the Eastern Conference playoff picture taking shape. So it will be a really fun day. Whether you like it or not, the NFL has changed the game. The NFL is going to be much different next year moving forward. The NFL has made a rule change that simply says this, and this is about as simple as you can make it. Here's Rich McKay. He's on the competition committee. He's with the Atlanta Falcons. This is the rule. This is as simple as it gets.
This is simply, if you lower your head to initiate contact and you make contact with an opponent, it's a foul.
We'll say that again. This is the new rule taking place in the NFL next year.
This is simply, if you lower your head to initiate contact and you make contact with an opponent, it's a foul.
If you lower your head to make contact and you make contact, that's a foul. That is the NFL world we are going to live in 2018. I'm not here to tell you that it's right or wrong. I'm here to tell you the NFL as we know it is going to be different. There's going to be a massive ripple of effects that come from this rule change. I'm all for player safety. But if you're somebody who wants player safety but doesn't want the game to change, you're not going to get your wish. You're not going to get your wish. We talked about it with Jim Dayopoulos, and a former NFL head of officiating. If you missed that, we're working on getting it up right now. Our intern Nathan is working on getting that online right now. So if you want to hear his full thoughts on it from the guy who used to be an official in the league, you can find that online. But I'm with Sal Palantonio. Sal Palantonio of ESPN, he was on Golic and Wingo today, and he said this is a huge moment.
Yesterday, you know, they put in a rule into place unanimously that I think is a watershed moment. And I think Rich McKay said it right, chairman of the competition committee. This is a significant sea change in the way we will play tackle football in America. That if you lower your head to initiate contact, it is a foul.
The game is changing. The game is going to be different. Your thoughts on the new rule, 802-655-6672. You can get in on the Town Fair Tire text line. Text in, because intern Nathan's putting everything up online, so he's not here to answer the phone. So you got to text in with your thoughts. 802-655-6672. It is a watershed moment in NFL history. The game as we know it is going to completely change. And here are some of the effects. On the positive side, yes, the game is going to get safer. There's going to be less head injuries when you're trying to take the head out of the game. The game will get safer. Put that aside. Here are other things that are going to happen. You'll need to see active game day rosters expanded. Right now, 46 players can dress on game day. You're going to need more. Because if you lead with your head, if you use your head, you're automatically subject to a possible ejection. You could have 4 or 5 ejections a game, especially early, as players that have played this way their whole lives are getting used to playing a new way. You're going to need to see roster sizes on game day expand. You may need more than 53 men on your active roster in general. You might need 60 so that you can dress 53 on game day. I don't know contractually and practice squad-wise what that does, but you're going to need more players dressed because you can have more players ejected than you would usually have. It's going to take out some guys with very specific skill sets. As we go to player safety, as we go to the extreme on player safety and getting rid of kickoffs, that may follow soon too. You're going to see players with specific skill sets phased out of the league. As that rule says right now, if you lower your head and initiate contact, it's a foul. Well, what does that mean then for the bulldozing running back? What does that mean for the battering ram running back who's running in the middle of the field, who lowers his shoulder, lowers his head to push the pile for 3-4 yards? Because as it's written right now, and as Rich McKay just said, that's a foul. You now need to run straight up and get tackled straight up like we used to play snow football in my backyard with no equipment. That's what the rule says now. Maybe the wording will change and the verbiage will change by OTA time, but as it stands right now, the bulldozing running back has no place in this league because you can't duck your shoulder, you can't duck your head to try to move a pile. Also, when kick returns get phased out, which I think that's coming too, you're going to lose kick returners. Kick returners who don't have another position. Cordero Patterson traded for by the Patriots. He's going to be their primary kick returner. He may also play some wide receiver, but the fact that his value is as a kick returner, he won't be in the NFL anymore. Devin Hester never would have been in the NFL. Dante Hall never would have been in the NFL. You need to be able to do other things like Danny Amendola, Deion Lewis, Deion Sanders, guys that returned kicks in some form, kicks or punts, and also played other positions. And they were good at Tyler Lockett in Seattle, wide receiver, kick returner, but a good wide receiver. You're going to lose certain players in the NFL. We never would have known Devin Hester. So the next Devin Hester, that returns kicks, we're not going to see. Also, going back to the running back, losing the battering ram running back, hello to more speed and agility-driven players. Because if I can't run you over and run through you very easily because it's a foul, then I'm going to get to the point where all of my players are just shifty players that juke you out of your shoes. All of a sudden, Darren Sproles becomes a hugely viable part of an offense. Christian McCaffrey, who was the number 8 pick in the NFL draft last year, that guy becomes hugely important. Shifty players, not power players. We're trying to take out leading with the head. Well, Marshawn Lynch ducks the head and moves the pile. Marshawn Lynch won't be viable in the NFL anymore because he'll be too much of a flag risk, too much of a liability. Christian McCaffrey is the guy moving forward. Leonard Fournette, not necessary. Not going to move the pile. It's going to be James White. Those are going to be the players that become more valuable. If you agree with me or disagree, let me know. Town Fair Tire text line 802-655-6672. Glenn in Moncton, does this include running backs? They no longer allow a defensive player to leap over the front line to block field goals, but running backs can leap over the pile, so it's okay if it's applied on both sides. Glenn, I think jumping over the pile is still okay as long as you're not making contact with your head first with somebody. Generally, what we see the running back do is the running back jumps up, and if they get hit, they're getting hit in their midsection, so they're not initiating contact with their head, or they simply get in and fall. They're not hitting someone with their head first very often because the defensive player is not jumping up with them also. What about quarterback sneaks? That's what I wonder about. As it stands right now, you cannot successfully do a quarterback sneak because the quarterback will always lead with his head. How about offensive linemen? Offensive linemen who are told, get lower. You know, as Antonio Daniels just said in basketball, same thing in football. Low guy wins. Low man wins. Defensive player wants to get underneath the offensive player's pad. Offensive player is going to come out of his stance. Offensive lineman leads with the head a little bit on run blocking. Can't do that anymore. Is that a flag? As it stands right now, I like the idea of player safety, but I hate what this is going to do to the game. I hate how it's going to make the game be played. Now, if there's clarification and verbiage done between now and OTA time in early May, then fine. But as it stands right now, this is not going to be football as we know it. And continuing on, as I understand it, this game is going to become more slow. Not that it's going to take longer, but it could, because now you can throw in reviews on should players be ejected, and more players are going to be ejected, so there's going to be more standing around where referees sort things out. The game could get longer, but I think that it takes some of the speed out of the game. Because, and what I mean by that is especially defensively, now it feels like to me, rather than me coming up to you and quote launching, and I don't mean launching like as a weapon, like a torpedo. I just mean it's me jumping to tackle you and maybe hitting you with my head and your shoulder pad, which is now a foul. We're going to need defensive players that come up to you, in front of you, break down, and then wrap you up high, and then have to gang tackle you like we played in the backyard again with no helmets. When you play with no helmets, the head is out of the equation. So how do you tackle guys? Well, you tackle them and you pull them down by the, you know, by the jersey, and hopefully you get them. Or you hold them up long enough to let somebody else come and tackle them safely. I think we're going to see more missed tackles. That's hard to do. More missed tackles, more sloppy defensive plays. And finally, yeah, it's just going to feel different. It's going to feel slower. It's going to be more missed tackles. Defensively, it's not going to be pretty. And Jim Diapoulos told us that it's going to take a while. To get used to. They said this first year is going to be rough. Logan, our intern, says, what does this do to the NFL's rating as other leagues will still utilize the other rules? I think you mean, what is this going to do versus like NFL versus college football? The NFL is trying to filter this down to college football and high school football, and you need it played every way. Whatever the NFL does, the other leagues, I mean, they don't legally have to, but they need to follow suit, because if they're all trying to get to that level, and that's what player safety is, and it has to be that way. it has to be taught starting at – it's going to be really hard this year for players who have played this way their whole life, for played a certain way their whole life, to change. You need to get to the point where you're just bringing kids along who have only played this way. It's like the tobacco rule in baseball. They want to ban chewing tobacco in baseball. You can't just ban it in major leagues for kids who have been doing it since they were 16. You need to ban it in high school and college and the minor leagues, which is what they've done, so that eventually you get a wave of major leaguers that have never done it. All right, that's NFL talk. When we come back, we'll get you a little ready for opening day, Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on a Wednesday on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Final segment here going up until 7 o'clock. Remember, we are off the air tomorrow, opening day. It's been a long winter. It's been a long winter. It's been a cold winter, but baseball is back tomorrow. Red Sox taking on the Rays. Love the coverage for you. Starting at 3:15, first pitch just after 4. Remember, we'll be there at RJ's watching the game downtown. So listen to the pregame show, then come on over and hang out with us. I think everyone's starting to develop a case of the sniffles and maybe a slight cough or something. So we'll see you over at Reuben James. Thanks to our friends over at Sam Adams. Love tons of giveaways going on, all kinds of swag. We're giving away a pair of Red Sox tickets as well tomorrow on site. So opening day is great, and I know Arnie likes to make fun of me because I'm a baseball nerd and because he doesn't love baseball like I do, but there is just a perfect beauty to opening day. What it represents, not only from your sport, not only from the sports perspective, we're happy to see our favorite teams play, but just what opening day represents. Opening day represents a lot of things. You know, the transition from that cold winter, you know, where it was negative 35 or whatever air temperature here in Burlington and Plattsburgh on New Year's Day, the transition from that to where we can finally see the light at the end of the tunnel, and we can think about 70-degree days, and we can think about being at Centennial Field watching the Lake Monsters. And it represents, you know, the bond between a father and son. And all this stuff is cliche, but it's all true. As I go through my baseball career, I've thought, if someone ever asked me, what's the most memorable thing you've ever done on a baseball field? There's a lot of things that come to my head. Pitching against a nationally ranked team multiple times in college, pitching in the summer in the Albany Twilight League, the oldest, you know, amateur baseball league in the country, pitching there, starting the All-Star game in that league, pitching in that league for 5 years or whatever, winning a men's league title. I mean, I've done a lot of things, playing in the, you know, playing in World Series growing up, and, you know, Babe Ruth type stuff. I've done a lot of cool things on a baseball field, and I've gotten to go to spring training games, and I've been to Yankee Stadium in the playoffs, old Yankee Stadium in the playoffs back in 2000, Mariners and Yankees, coached in college, sent guys on to get scholarships. All of that stuff has been great, but none of it compares to just playing catch with my dad. The more I think about it, my favorite baseball memory is just playing catch with my dad, dragging him outside when I was 3 years old, hitting balls over the house with a giant red bat. And then playing wiffle ball with my best friends every summer. Though, you know, my friends and I played like 100-game wiffle ball season for 2 or 3 summers in a row, and that was some of the most fun that I ever had. So the bond between father and son, the bond between the neighborhood kids, the sand lot, I mean, that it's all cliche, but it's all true, and it all starts tomorrow. I can't wait for baseball to be back. And I feel like up here, there's a lot of excitement for opening day. I think Yankee fans are excited about Stanton and Judge. I think Red Sox fans are excited because of the young talent still with Betts and Benintendi and Devers and Bogart still there. And what can David Price do? I think there's optimism up here. But by and large, I think people generally don't get into baseball really until the summer. And they say, oh, it doesn't feel like baseball season until the summer. Or we got so much else going on. We got NFL draft still coming. People are interested in that. NHL playoffs, NBA playoffs. And people are like, well, I'll just table baseball until the end of the year. I'm a Mariners fan. I can't do that. By the time July 1st hits, the season is usually over by that point for the Mariners. So I got to get into it starting tomorrow. So I'm excited for opening day. We did this in the huddle, but I'll just tell you one more time. some of the storylines that you need to be paying attention to. If you're going to watch baseball and you're going to be in it for 162 and you're going to be in it as religiously as I am, there's a lot of things that you need to know about. We mentioned the Yankees. Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton have the potential to be historic. I mean, with that line, the Yankees already led the league in home runs last year. This is only going to be the second time ever that the team that led the majors in home runs added the player who led the majors in home runs the year before. You know, the last time it happened? 1920, when the Yankees added Babe Ruth. So what the Yankees have done this year is different. It's not normal. They have added supreme talent. They have got, in my mind, maybe outside of the Astros, who have maybe the most complete lineup in baseball, the Yankees have the most power in baseball. And as much as I'm not a Yankee fan, that's going to be extremely fun to watch. I mean, Stanton had 59 home runs last year. Judge had 52. They were 1-2 in Major League Baseball in home runs. The last time, actually the only time that a pair of teammates hit 50 homers in the same season, Roger Maris 61, Mickey Mantle 54 in 1961. The Yankees had the potential to do something that hasn't been done in more than 50 years. In more than 50 years, have two teammates hit 50 home runs. So if you're watching the game and you like the long ball, then you need to be watching the Yankees because they have a chance to do things that haven't been replicated in baseball since the 1960s. And that would be pretty amazing. It is Champlain Valley Game Night again right here on a Wednesday on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. We talk about home runs. Well, how about the year of the home run? Last year, there were 6,100 home runs in baseball. 6,100. That is, you know, it was 400 more than the previous ever high in a season, which was 2000. Does the trajectory of home runs continue? Can we go higher than that? Can we go further than that? Can there be more power in the game this year? I don't know that that number gets reached this season. I'm not sure that that can happen because it's never happened before. I don't know if it could happen again. But I think the home run craze is here to stay. Pitching is so good. And pitchers throw so hard, and there's so much swing and miss in the game that hitters have said, we will sacrifice contact stats for the ability to drive in runs because you may miss the ball. You may strike out three times in a game, but the one time you hit it, it might go a long way. I think home runs are here to stay, and I think it makes the game more boring. There's less action when there's 14 strikeouts in a game, and that is tough to watch. I get people that say that, but I don't think that it's going anywhere. And we talked with Buster Olney just an hour and a half ago or whatever in the huddle about the idea of the four-man outfield. I'm fascinated to see that too, because I think that's something that you're going to start seeing in baseball. If more players are going to hit the ball in the air, and if more players are going to make a conscious effort to hit the ball in the air, then why are baseball teams not going to eventually adapt and say, fine, if you're trying to hit the ball higher, harder, and farther, then we're going to offset that by putting four players out in the outfield and take away your open space out there. It's one, if you're going to hit it over the wall, then it doesn't matter how many outfielders we've got because it's going over the fence. And if you're going to hit it in the field of play, we're going to restrict your opportunity to see the ball fall. And I don't love that optically, right? We all know baseball with three outfielders and four infielders. We all know that. That's how we know baseball. But my object is to keep you from scoring runs. And however I want to do that is fine. We see it in basketball. Teams will play zone defense versus man-to-man. Team will press. Team will sit back. Team will trap. Team will pick up at half court. Defensive strategy is a major part of basketball. Now, they've taken the zone out of the NBA because they want the lane open so teams can score. But in college basketball, high school basketball growing up, defensive strategy is a major part of the game. And you're going to see that in baseball. You've seen it with the infield shift starting a decade ago. Now you might see it with the outfield playing with four players. In the NFL, teams will play zone. Teams will play man. Teams will play press. Teams will sag off. Teams will blitz. Teams will go 3-4. Teams will go 4-3. Defensive strategy has been a part of sports. It's been a part of baseball. Now we might see a continued evolution of that. I think that's fascinating. I don't know that that is coming you know, with a lot of regularity. But I think that you're going to see that in some games, and it's going to look weird, but it's going to be interesting. Other things as we come down to the wire here on Champlain Valley Game Night, things to pay attention to. Teams like the Nationals, teams like the Indians, teams that have been really good for the last 4 or 5 years, are they on their last legs? I mean, in Cleveland, Cody Allen, Andrew Miller, I believe, free agents at the end of the year. That Cleveland bullpen, which revitalized the way we used bullpens in the playoffs 2 years ago, they could both be gone. And we just don't know what's going to happen with that Indians team as those players start to age and start to hit contract numbers that the Indians, a mid-major, you know, a mid-market team, that they necessarily can't keep up with. What about the Nationals? I mean, Bryce Harper, free agent, end of the year. Daniel Murphy, free agent, end of the year. Gio Gonzalez, free agent, end of the year. Anthony Rendon's coming next year. So this Nationals core that's been really good and dominated the NL East, it might not be able to stay together. And as you look at teams like the Phillies and Braves that are coming, part of the reason the Nationals have been so successful in that division is because the rest of the division has been terrible. Well, the Phillies and Braves are coming, and they're not going to be pushovers, and it's going to be harder for the Nationals to just dominate that division again. Other things sticking in the NL East, Mets, I want to see a time through the rotation for those big five pitchers. And it's not going to be at the start of the year because Zach Wheeler didn't make the starting rotation. Seth Lugo did. But it's, I want one turn through the rotation of Noah Syndergaard, Jacob DeGrom, Matt Harvey, Zach Wheeler, and whoever the fifth one is. I want one turn through the rotation for the Mets' big five starters. Maybe it was only four. I don't know. John Neese was out there for a while. So I want those Mets' arms that we heard so long about that haven't been able to stay healthy. I want those teams to be able, or I want those guys to be able to make one together. What about tanking? Tanking's been a story in baseball. Teams, I'm not trying to lose, but teams not propelling themselves to victories. It worked for the Cubs who won a World Series. It worked for the Astros that won a World Series. Will we see fruits of that labor for teams that are doing the same thing like the White Sox? White Sox were horrible last year. Will they come out and win 75 games this year so that it leads to 82 games next year? And in 3 years, that team's a 94-win team, and they're in a chance to win a World Series. I'm interested in that. And lastly, pace of play. Pace of play, the thing that is, it's the talk of baseball, and people are so, I have said this from the start, people are so protective of their own sport and so quick to admonish other sports' issues that this, I hate this discussion. If I tell you that I don't like soccer, and I say soccer's too boring, well, you know what? Soccer is in 90 minutes. It's an hour and a half of my time, 2 hours by the time you include intermissions. 2 hours of my time, and it's regimented on that schedule. But I'll tell you that 1-0 or 0-0 was boring. But soccer guy will tell you that that is great. I might say, look, I don't love the NHL. The NHL lasts 2 hours. I don't love the NHL. And 1-0 hockey to me, that not it's boring. People will say that. Hockey guy will say, no, 1-0 hockey is riveting. It's awesome. There's nothing like close hockey, especially in the playoffs. That game goes quick. It's not about pace of play. It's about lack of action. Okay, if you told me the hockey game was going to be 7-5, me, the average fan, is more interested. If you told me the soccer game was going to be 4-3, me, the average fan, is more interested. I'll tell people that 1-0 baseball is riveting. It's thrilling. It's a chess match. You're going to say it's boring. If I told you it was going to be 8-7, you'll sacrifice it being 3 hours and 10 minutes if you're guaranteed action. 2 hours 58 minutes at 0-0 and 3 hours and 21 minutes at 8-7, I think you're more interested in 3 hours and 21 minutes. Pace of play is going to be a discussion, and I'll maintain that it's not pace of play, it's lack of action in baseball. All right, that'll do it for us here on Champlain Valley Game Night. Opening day tomorrow. I am pumped. You can be with us at RJ's. Thanks to our friends over at Sam Adams. 4 o'clock, we will be there. We'll be there until the conclusion of the Red Sox game. Happy sale day, everybody. And if you're a Yankee fan, good luck to the Yanks against the Blue Jays as well. We will see you tomorrow at RJ's. And Arnie's texting me saying, you got to get back on the horse after last night's stinker. So I'm going to go off and play some basketball as well. We'll see you at Reuben James tomorrow at Champlain Valley Game Night, everybody, on 101.3 ESPN.